When you're riding after rattlesnakes, you've got to be tough. You've got to be rough. You've got to shoot straight. Be on the lookout. The James Gang is back in town, and they're meaner than ever. There's Brother Eli. He stomped down many a snake in his day, and he ain't done yet. His younger brother Dave, quicker than a horned toad, he can hunt down a snake's lie. Then there's Sister Jean. She can whip out a scripture faster than a Colt 45. Wanted, dead or alive, they'll be coming for you. It's the James Gang on EuroFolkRadio.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is One-to-One on EuroFolk Radio. We're starting a new series today, which is going to cover how the Jews caused World War I, how the Jews blamed Germany for World War I, therefore guaranteeing World War II, and et cetera, et cetera. We're going to be shining the light on the Jewish parasites who are responsible for all wars in the modern era. But first, David James has an opening statement here. Go ahead, David.
Hello, everybody. Hello. I want before this is sort of a preface to the whole thing. I want you to see what was taking place, and I think this is going to really shock you when you really think about this, okay? The only way they could go to World War I was to have 1913 happen, which we know brought in the Federal Reserve Act so that they could supply the money. They also brought in the ADL so that they could cause all kinds of trouble in the nation while we were at war. And they also, of course, brought in the IRS Act, which would be enacted later. They often put in things. I mean, they might have enacted it in certain areas, but they didn't do it to the public until the Second World War, and they really started it up. But unless I'm not informed about that. So you got to think about 1913, because without 1913, 1914 is not going to happen. So 1914, the World War I starts. It only took a year to get it going. If that, I don't even know what the months were between it. It could have been 6 months. I don't really know. I haven't checked that out. But also, while we're at war, okay, 1918 is when the war ended, World War I ended. What happened during those war years? Well, from 1915 to 1917, while nobody was looking, the Armenian Genocide was taking place. And, of course, that's Turkey. That's where they are the ones that own Palestine. This is the sick man that Jacob Schiff was talking about. But what else happened during this period? Why, the Bolshevik Revolution took place a year before the war ended. So it's just like today's news, the Jews, while we were all focusing on World War One, they were doing their dirty work in other areas where people weren't paying attention. And of course they controlled the media of those days and could keep that in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, same thing.
Is that not amazing?
Oh yeah.
I mean, think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, people are looking sideways and they're being distracted, just like during the Vietnam War, the Jews had a coup, a public relations and socialist communist coup here in America, changing our society forever, turning it into a socialist multicultural state under cover of war, okay? So they always use war as a distraction for their subversive activities around the world. Yeah, back to you.
And so when you look at false flag attacks, that's like a war event, right? A false war event to keep you looking at that event while they're doing something somewhere else. So anytime you have war, you know that you're going to be able to change the laws of the country.
Right.
You're going to be able to topple and kill many of the citizens of each of those countries. You know that there's going to be all kinds of money made from rebuilding and loans to rebuild all the damage that was done during the wars. And of course, the ADL's in place right in time to continue its terrorist activities in the United States.
Yes.
So when you're looking at this, when you're looking at the whole thing, is the Balfour Declaration comes along. They want to have that little land in Palestine. They want to steal it, you see, because it's not theirs. They're not the legitimate Israelites, or they are not even called Israelites. They're Israelis. Notice that. Notice that it's too stupid to call themselves Israelites. They call themselves Israelis. Mm-hmm. They're false, all right? So when we look at World War One, we know that Germany had 2.2 million men. They had the least in artillery. And when you look at Russia had 1.2, I believe, million men. And England had 700,000 men, a little more than 700,000 men, but they had the most artillery. So the Germans were doing this thing called the Schlieffen Plan, where they were going to take out – they had, two of the allies on each side of them, Russia on the right, France on the left.
Yes.
So they decided to take France out on the left first, but Russia had more time to build up their armies and build up everything while they were taking France out. So that didn't help them. But nevertheless, you remember that they were 2 weeks away from winning this World War II, 2 weeks away, and they – they made a proposal. We don't want any reparations. We're not going to take anything from England. We don't want anything. We just want to stop the war. We'll all just pick up and go home.
Yes.
Well, the Jews would not have that. And England was about 2 weeks away from it. Was it? They didn't have enough food or anything.
Right.
So it ended up, they said, no, we're not going to let you do that. But it ended up that way anyway, because Germany, when they finished the war, they just picked up their gear and went home. But guess what happened? The other side, the Allies, wanted the reparations.
Right.
They wanted to – here's the word of this year, ladies and gentlemen. They wanted to divide up Germany's land and give
That's
it to
right.
other – divide.
Exactly.
Which weakens the nation.
Yes.
They separated some of the people in the Polish quarters. They gave away Germany's land. And this is the segue that maybe you want to talk about the Versailles Treaty and the Jews, if you want. But this is what happened. Here it is. The Jews are dividing again. You know, I remember when the Three Stooges were doing a joke thing on this, and he says, we'll split up the world. Mo says, give me my world, right? and Larry says, I'll take Greece. You know what I mean? And in other words, they were joking about how they were going to split up all the world.
Right.
Which was going to take place in World War II, you see. But this was, this was a little earlier. And, it's funny that that's exactly what it is. What the Jews planned on doing is exactly what they plan on doing with the Middle East right now. They plan on, by getting rid of those citizens and putting them with us, they hope that we'll all kill each other. As many as possible will die. And Netanyahu and his buddy said that they want to restructure the Middle East.
That's
in other
right.
words, they're going to split it up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, redefine borders. What they always do is they create multicultural states, which are guaranteed to be at war with one another in the near future. That's what they did when they created Yugoslavia. That's what they did when they created Czechoslovakia. That's what they did when they created, all those Middle East, Yemen and others. They knew that there's going to be oil wars in the future, right? And the best way to control non-Jewish populations is by constant strife. And you've been pointing out that their divide and conquer strategy has been working very well. And because they own the media, the public is totally misinformed as to the real cause of all these wars and the real cause of all this division. It's blamed on nationalism, which is not true. The real cause is deliberate Jewish divide-and-conquer tactics.
May I just say a few more things? The reason why Poland was an enemy of Germany is because Poland has always been Jew-controlled, so to speak. They still stand with the Holocaust and everything today.
That's correct.
Although some of the Poles have been starting to rise up. So the Jews had caused a division between Germany and the Polish people that had been going on for quite some time. It had been going on for an awful long time. Mm-hmm. And also, may I point this out, that this is something I didn't know, which I don't know everything, but I'm just saying that I didn't know this. Italy was useless in World War I, and Italy was useless in World War II.
Right.
It ended up that there was a division between Italy and Hungary. I mean, Italy and Austria. Who was part of the allies of the Germans. I forget what it was called, but what happened was the Germans were really fighting the war alone again, just like World War II, except for Japanese were some help.
Yes.
But what happened is Italy started fighting with Austria.
Uh-huh.
So the divided house fell.
Right.
However, the Germans still could have won the war and still would have won the war. Of course, America, the Jews got America by false pretenses because the Germans were using their submarines to destroy supplies, right, to destroy supply ships. And we all have talked about the Lusitania before, which is a false flag, a lie, right. And yeah, it was the very thing, wasn't it, other than Ferdinand, to get the Americans into the war?
That was the excuse that Wilson used before Congress to declare war, right? But the Germans had actually taken out ads in Boston and New York Harbor telling Americans to stay off the Lusitania because it contained war material. And it was actually our government was in default against our neutrality agreement with Germany at that time. And the Germans knew it, and they announced to the public, hey, we're going to sink this ship because it's full of war materials destined for Britain, right? So the Germans had every right to sink the ship because they were the American government was reneging on its deal with the Germans, okay? There's just all kind of backstabbing that the American people are not aware of. And, again, it's all maneuvering by Jews. And obviously the Jews had to have Woodrow Wilson in their hip pocket to use as a rubber stamp for all of these global policies that the Jews initiated, including starting all these wars, right? So, but here, we'll lead up to the Versailles Treaty, which is very important to understand that the Versailles Treaty was an entirely Jewish affair, and it was the means by which the Jews divvied up the defeated nations of World
dividing,
War.
Dividing, yeah,
exactly.
Dividing,
right.
Dividing,
and they created
divvied
new
up, get it? Dividing,
right, exactly.
Divvied up means dividing it up.
Absolutely. And so
I'm going to hone on this word for all of this year at least, because this is the enemy's greatest tool, dividing.
Right. But the fact that they have the power to draw new borders around nations is just incredible. But they all, because the Jews are internationalists, they have no allegiance to any nation except that little basket case in the Middle East called Israel, which will never become a nation, that because the Jews have never had any nations of their own, they could care less about how the citizens of other nations feel. And so they're free to destroy nations and national boundaries as suits their international schemes, okay? But there's an article from the sleuthjournal.com, The Cause and Consequences of World War I. And it starts out with a quotation by Harry Patch, the last surviving soldier of World War I. And he stated, "I felt then, as I feel now, that the politicians who took us to war should have been given the guns and told to settle their differences themselves, instead of organizing nothing better than legalized mass murder." Now, there's a soldier who figured out what was really going on. It was nothing but
And who legalizes mass murder but the Jews?
That's right.
Even with abortion, their Jewish ritual murder sacrifice of children.
There
who but them does this.
Yes, yeah. Judaism is nothing but a massive onslaught against humanity. And I'm talking about all nations, but primarily the white nations, because the Jews know that we are the only thing standing between us, or between them, rather, and total domination of the world, because no other race is capable of challenging them. Okay, the Jews know this. The Jews control Japan, they control China, and of course they control the Arab world too, and they control America and the West. But it's only in the West where there's any organized resistance to them. It's primarily here in America where the right wing stands up, and thanks to our Constitution, the Second Amendment, the Jews have failed to take over our country completely, and they won't take over as long as the Second Amendment's in place. But here is Albert Mensdorf, Jewish Austrian ambassador to England, quoted in The Silent Invasion of America. Israel, meaning the Jews, won World War I. We made it. We thrived on it. We profited from it. It was our supreme revenge on Christianity. Okay.
Stop right there for a second, though. Sure. Think about what I told you previously in this show. While they were orchestrating this mass murder, they murdered the Tsar and got revenge on him from the 1815 Congress. The predecessor had said no way to the United Nations.
And the Civil War.
Rothschild told him, I'll get your family. It doesn't matter how long. They'll never forgive or never forget, like the Mossad says. Right? So while this is all going on, this mass murder, this isn't enough what's going on here. They're mass murdering the Tsar and his family and all the people over in Russia, right? Yeah. And they're going to mess, because that's the next sick man. But at the same time, they're destroying the previous sick man, which is Turkey, right, which is, you know, who owns the land in Palestine. And they're doing the Armenian genocide. This is all Freemasonry's involved in all three things. Remember that Freemasonry is involved in World War I, and that, see, after the war, the Germans had, they knew they were superior, and they're saying, how did we lose this war? And so they began to talk about it, and they figured out that the Jews were, the subversive Jews and communists were in their government, were in the papers and everything else, and were already causing the subverting of the nation even before World War One. They had been working on this even before it took place.
Yes.
And so they found, that's why Hitler, the first thing he did was he wanted to get the Jews out of the country, and he wanted to get the Freemasons out of the country.
That's right.
Because he found out who it was. That's all I want to say. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's perfectly accurate. Yeah, but let me just back up to before, because this, it all revolves around Palestine and Zionism and the Jewish claim on that territory. Now, we don't have to go into great detail because we know the Jews are not Israelites and have no ethnic, religious, or any other sort of claim on that territory because they're not Israel. That's a lie. But going back to the beginning of the Zionist movement, which would be around 1882, the Jews, through, I forget which agent it was, might have been Weizmann, might have been somebody else, tried to buy the Palestinian territory from the Turks. But the leader of the Turks said, no, I can't give you that country. It's not mine to give. It belongs to the people who live there. Okay? So the Jews, a first attempt to simply take Palestine or buy it from Turkey, failed. And so then they realized, okay, well, what's going to happen? As long as Turkey controls Palestine, we're not going to get our hands on it. So let's divide and conquer. Let's create a war. And we have other objectives in mind anyway. As you pointed out, they wanted to murder the Tsar and take over Russia and communize it. Okay.
He was the richest man in the world, right? You know that he was the absolute richest man in the world, and his money was in their banks across the world. And so not only that, but the nation was a lot of Christian white people.
Right. Yeah. Now, in the meantime, Germany had built a railroad system across Turkey, and so Germany and Turkey were binding strong ties to one another economically, all right? So they realized that Germany was going to be a problem. So what they did was they orchestrated a war against Germany. They knew they could count on Russia because Russia wanted a warm water port along the Black Sea so that their navy could go out to Mediterranean to the open sea. The czars had been wanting this warm water port for decades, really. Okay, they knew they could count on Russia to join World War One, but then France and Britain were both very unsettled about the fact that Germany was becoming an industrial powerhouse. Germany was outproducing France and Britain combined with its modern technology. So the bankers who controlled France and Britain viewed with alarm what was going on in Germany. So here is another reason why the Jews had to destroy Germany. Okay, so because number
wouldn't
one,
you say it's more? Wouldn't you say it's a little more like the Jews within the UK were worried about
yes,
Germany,
of course.
Rather than you
yes.
know the UK itself,
right?
Or
but,
no?
Well, that's exactly right. If that's
the
what
Jew-K.
I meant, yeah, if, that's what I meant. If I didn't say it, the Rothschilds and Jewish bankers in both France and Britain, because France and Britain had nothing to gain by making war on Germany. Obviously, all the nations involved lost tremendous numbers of people, the exception being the Jews, who virtually lost nobody during World War One. Okay? And so what we see is the Rothschilds and other Jewish bankers who all stood to make money by taking over the countries that lost the war, such as Turkey and Germany and Palestine and Russia, okay, because Russia, the Tsar wasn't able to see through the Rothschild plan that they were planning on destroying Russia in the midst of World War One. So they got sucked in. Russia got sucked in, and they were destroyed. And Poland, Poland was World War II, but Poland was not even a nation yet. You know, because Poland had had its issues with Jews for centuries. Since around 1200 AD, the Jews had been bribing the Polish monarchs to exploit the Polish people. They hired the Jews as tax collectors, as middlemen in businesses, and basically the Jews took over all the large Polish cities, and the Polish peasants were paupers in the countryside and in the cities, okay? So the Jews had had powerful influence with Polish royalty since the 1200s, okay? So Poland, they could count on Poland to be on the side of the Jews as well. So everything now hinges on Zionism. Zionism must go forward, but there's a big push by all of the global Zionists to take Palestine away from the Turks. And the Germans, being the Turkish allies, had to be overthrown as well. This is why the Jews plotted World War One against Germany and Turkey. Bottom line, that's why they plotted it. Now, over to you.
Yeah, well, that's why they made Turkey the sick man in the first place.
Yes.
They wanted to weaken it. And they stole everything. Like I said in that Jacob Schiff book, that Turkey is our current sick man. We need another sick man. And he was referring to Russia.
That's right.
So they had Turkey. He boasts about how they stole everything from the Turks, from you know,
yes.
all the railroads, because that was bothering Rothschild. It was interrupting his streams of business and the way he would run his business. They wanted those railroads, those paths through those areas so that they could, you know, do their commerce that way. In other words, they didn't like that the Turks had those railroads and different things. They wanted those. So they stole everything they could off the nation, sucked it dry like they're doing to America and every other nation today. And basically they decided, well, we want to kill some of them at the same time. You know what I mean? These Christian, Armenian Christians.
Yes.
So they did that nice. They always loved to shed some blood, you know.
Right.
When you know,
yeah,
you see,
like
I didn't
Cain,
even realize,
right?
I'm not even thinking about that this is all taking place in just a short period of time. Let's just say it's 1913 to 1918, that 5-year period, all this has gone on. We've
yes.
got the Federal Reserve to fund it. We've brought a big tax on the people that's illegal. And we've been able to start the World War. And while people are looking at that, we're killing people over here, stealing the Tsar's money over here, sucking
yeah.
Turkey dry, and shooting people in the head over here. And then they're in the Jews, they're in Poland. right? And yes. they're aggravating those people against the Germans constantly. Constantly this divide between those people because, of course, they're on the border of Germany, too. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Well, here, let me go back into those days because you cannot understand the causes of World War I unless you understand that it's all about the Jews taking control of Palestine. That's what it's all about. Okay, one of the Rothschilds in his will left money for ongoing building projects, and they say Israel in this article, but in Palestine because it wasn't Israel, it still isn't even Israel today, but for Palestine, and when the Turkish leader rebuffed the Rothschilds and rejected money for giving them Palestine. They started buying up properties. So Jews started moving to Palestine and started buying up property. Okay. So he says, one of the Rothschilds in his will left money for ongoing building projects in Palestine, and the Rothschilds are honored with a street named after them in Jerusalem, right? The Rothschild Boulevard. The people of Germany and Turkey have been very close. I can recall meeting Turkish Gastarbeiter, guest workers in Germany. The reader will remember that Turkey fought on Germany's side in World War I. A few powerful Jews, including the Rothschilds, were responsible for the wording of the treaty imposed on Germany that ended World War I, that is the Versailles Treaty. This treaty gave the Rothschilds the German-owned railway rights in Palestine, which had been part of the Turkish Ottoman Empire, thus paving the way for the Rothschilds to have a sure leverage to dictate policy concerning Palestine. The Rothschilds had made loans to Turkey, which amounted to almost 100 million pounds. When the Turkish government collapsed after World War I because they were on the losing side, the Rothschilds had a claim on Palestine because of those unpaid Turkish loans.
What's new? What is new about that? That is how it's done, ladies and gentlemen.
Right?
That's how it's always been done.
Yes.
Hey, don't worry. We'll give you a loan. And then when you can't pay it back, don't worry. We'll take your railroads and your mineral rights and your oil, and we'll give you another loan.
Yeah, yeah. It's incredible because the Jews are always finagling their way into the affairs of nations for a purpose. And if there is no original purpose, eventually they'll come up with one. And they'll figure out a way to destroy that country, to make money off that country, and create a new nation on the heaps of ruins that nation has become. That is
Eli,
how,
something you might think about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why? I can answer the question, but why didn't they just want to just take Russia for themselves and let that be their little homeland?
Right, right.
Because you know what the answer is.
Sure.
Because then they wouldn't be able to take that land and call it Israel, the former land. See, that's part of the whole deception, ladies and gentlemen. That's by calling that little land Israel. They have made you believe that they are us, that they are the Israel of the Bible. That's how the whole deception was to be made to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But see, they still don't have the land, and they can't have the land. But, you know, you'd say to yourself, well, why didn't they just take Russia? Why? You know, they had the whole thing, right? They could have just done it and taken it. Because Yahweh's not going to let them. That's why.
Right. Sure, sure. Well, you know, the immediate cause of World War I was the assassination of the Archduke, but that was all planned well ahead of time. Obviously, the Jews, as you mentioned earlier, wanted revenge against the Tsars for torpedoing the Congress of Vienna in 1815, and also for protecting the North in the Civil War, because the Tsar of Russia sent in the Russian fleet to New York Harbor and San Francisco Bay to prevent the French and the British from invading on behalf of the South. Okay, so this angered the Rothschilds to no end, and they swore that they would assassinate, the first opportunity they get, they would destroy Russia, assassinate the Tsar family, and take over Russia, which is the Bolshevik Revolution. This was very craftily conceived. Russia was sucked into World War I, and they were destroyed because of it.
And it was done by Jacob, through Jacob Schiff.
Yes, that's right.
In the first place. See, this czar, like I said, he was the richest man in the whole world. Of course the Jews would attract to that, even for that reason, if there was no other reason. They would have done it anyway. But imagine that this coup, while we were at war within the country, he has his Jacob Schiff, who already is talking about what they did to Armenia and how they need another sick man. And while that's all going on, they're doing this to Russia while nobody knows what's going
on. That's right.
And it's coming. It's funded from this country and people from this country.
By the Federal Reserve Bank.
Trotsky and
Jews. Jews.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So we have the five putative, publicly pronounced causes of World War One, which in this article it states mutual defense alliances, imperialism, properly more colonialism. It was more colonialism in those days. Militarism, but the militarism was, there really wasn't any militarism going on. Every country has a right to defend itself and prepare for war, okay? Germany realized that that they felt they were being encircled by France, Britain, and Russia. So the German government was feeling, hey, they're encircling us. They want to destroy us, right? So they were arming. Nationalism, it's not nationalism at all. Nationalism was being used by the international bankers, and that nationalistic sentiment was used by the bankers to divide and conquer, right? And create a war that never should have happened. But the immediate cause was the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand. Now, here's what they say. None of these simplistic categories or labels has any veritable bearing on the underlying political, social, economic, and evil forces that conspired to drive Western civilization into a self-induced suicidal slaughter. The true history of World War One is rooted in the permanent struggle against satanic powers that seek the destruction of Christendom, the financial enslavement of humanity, and the death of what he calls Gentile, that is, white society. Your comment?
Okay, but they forgot one great reason.
Okay.
Two great reasons, really. Germany was the last bastion of Europe, as I always say. In other words, they were the top power in Europe, whether it's money or military. And number two, they're the tribe of Judah.
Right, right. So the real reason for the Jews creating World War One was, number one, the initial spark was to take Palestine so they could further the plans of Zionism. Okay, with those plans being thwarted, they decided, well, let's start a war. We'll take over after the smoke clears. We will have Palestine. No one else can claim to it because we own the railroads. We've already bought lots of property there, and the Palestinian people will not be able to resist our invasion. Okay, and then you brought up the Balfour Declaration. That was part of the deal, too. So it was all focused on Palestine. And the destruction of European society was the means by which they gained Palestine. In other words,
remember when I say that they're the tribe of Judah, I don't
the
want
Germans.
Any Aryan nationalist to think I'm speaking of the Jews.
Right, right.
I'm speaking of Germany as the tribe of Judah.
That's right. The racially exclusive tribe of Judah. Yes.
You've read the Balfour Declaration. I've read it, and don't you think it's kind of hard to understand? I mean, what is it really saying to you when you've read it? I mean, it's sort of done in coded word, isn't it?
Well, it's vague. It's vague, but the primary principle that the Jews have violated was within the Balfour Declaration. It states that the rights of the Palestinian people shall not be prejudiced. And the Jews have not honored that clause at all. They have constantly driven
the Palestinians. Why would they?
Yeah, right. Exactly. The Jews
again, as you said, they first went in there and they bought whatever land they could buy. Does this sound familiar from what you just said?
That's
they
right.
tried to buy Palestine from the Ottoman Empire, and they said no. So what do we do next? Well, we bulldozer them.
Right. Exactly. Right. If they can't buy you, they kill you. That's how the Jews operate. Okay. So, in this war, the German Rothschilds loaned money to the Germans, the British Rothschilds loaned money to the British, and the French Rothschilds were loaned money to the French. Of course, there weren't any Rothschilds in Russia, so they couldn't do that. Furthermore, the Rothschilds have control of the three European news agencies, Reuters, Wolf in Germany, Reuters in England, and Havas in France. The Rothschilds used Wolf to manipulate the German people into a fervor for war. From around this time, the Rothschilds are rarely reported in the media because they own the media. David, has anything changed?
No, nothing has changed. And by the way, at the same time in America, they would have people writing books like the one about Germany Must Perish. Yes. And they say that the Germans are a warmongering people.
Yeah,
it's just
right.
in them, you see.
Yes.
They want to go to war. They want to kill. It's Judah. See, they're not even – they're admitting it without saying it. See, Judah was the greatest warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Of the tribes,
yeah, right.
Okay? And so they're actually admitting that Germany is the tribe of Judah
right.
here.
But,
in other words,
yes.
without saying it, right? Because they were warmongering people, they're saying,
yeah.
right?
But of course, that was
Which
a lie.
Which wasn't
because,
true.
Yeah, it's a lie because Germany, up since 1848, when I think it was actually 1862, when Germany officially recognized Jews and gave them full rights of citizens in Germany, the Jews of Germany were the most prosperous Jews in the world. Germany had treated them very well, very hospitably.
Of course.
Okay. So then when World War I came around and they had a reason for taking Palestine, they then turn around and stab Germany in the back, the very people who had been housing them, hosting them, feeding them, and giving them all kinds of money, allowing them to operate all kinds of businesses. So this propaganda that the Jews are somehow, that Germans are somehow an evil, warlike people, is the Jews know that's not true.
Because well, let me ask you this.
Yes.
If they were willing to just put the arms down when they won the war, where they were 2 weeks from winning the war.
Right.
Didn't seem like they were greedy people.
No, that's
it seemed
right.
like they were very merciful people to me.
Yeah.
And when we see World War II, that Hitler tried everything he could to not go in, enter into that war. Hey, why would he want to enter into the war in the first place? Germany was on a high.
Right.
After they had expelled the Jews, Freemasonry, within 4 years, they were not eating out of garbage cans anymore.
Right.
They had their homes back, their businesses. Their youth was healthy. They were a united nation. It was incredible, the absolute depiction of what unity in a unified nation could be. Why would you want to go to war?
Yes. Right. Yeah, no. Well, because the German people, well, we'll get into it, is the Danzig corridor, where German nationals or German ethnics were being slaughtered by Jews and Freemasons, which is the impetus for Hitler invading Poland in the first place. Okay.
Yeah, but guess who did this? Who was causing that to happen? It was somebody was influencing the Polish soldiers.
That's right.
I would assume that they are like our soldiers today, you know, fighting for the Polish freedom against these poor German people.
Yeah.
I mean, they were being paid to just bust in people's houses and claim that they had weapons, which they didn't have, and all kinds of things. And, you know where it was coming from. You know who was trying to make – they were poking Germany with a stick.
Yes.
And I told you,
exactly.
If you have an animal and you poke it – when I was a child, I did things like that, you know. And if you poke one enough times, it's going to attack.
Right. That's right.
I'm not saying I was an evil man, but you know how when you're a child, you know, you might corner a, like a, I don't know, some kind
Rottweiler.
Of an animal that's big and it's dangerous.
Don't you dare.
You try to keep it away from you. You might poke it a couple times, you know?
Yeah,
well, you keep on poking an animal and it's going to attack.
Right.
But you see, they didn't want to attack. Why would you want to ruin what was going on in Germany? Why would you want to go impoverish the country and divide everything all up again? Enough had happened in World War I where the German people had it.
Well, Hitler was trying to undo the horrible provisions of the Versailles Treaty, which was all instigated by Jews against the German people. You know, this is a smokescreen to blame Germany for World War I, which the Jews themselves provoked. They had to have a scapegoat, so they scapegoated Germany and stole everything the German people had, took their government away, tried to institute a communist-style revolution, which they had already done in Russia, okay, but the Germans warded that off, fortunately, okay. So everything, it's all Jewish. Every single aspect of World War I was instigated, financed, and executed by Jews, manipulating nation against nation, right? That's
and what was happening in Germany at the time while the Germans were fighting the World War One? Well, the Jews were working on their currency. They were destroying the Weimar Republic right. while this is all going on. They were operating through the government. They were operating through the press. They were operating through everything they could. These people are destructive. So picture it this way. When they're not in Germany, Germany rises up to be one of the greatest nations in the world, probably the greatest that has ever happened with unity. I've never seen anything like it. Right. But with the Jews in your nation or in your companies today, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a white man-owned company, you've got a lot of Jews in that company. What's happening is subversive things are going in your country or your company. I suggest if you have a white company owner, start to put an eye on the Jews in your company. Oh, I know they smile and I know they're nice. They're the nicest people in the world. How could they ever do anything wrong? Why don't you keep an extra eye on them and see what might be going on? Because I guarantee there's subversive things going on in your company. And one day, if you don't watch, you will lose your company.
Well, that's what happened.
The same thing for your country.
Right. That's what happened to Ted Turner, Turner Broadcasting. He was going along, making millions, married, who's that whore, that Hollywood whore, Jane Fonda, right? And so the vice president, a Jew, conspired to steal the company out from under his nose, right? So wherever is a Jew, he's going to subvert what you're doing. They're always going to
smile. While they smile at you.
While they're smiling, and while they're
the nicest people you could ever meet.
Right. So I think we've covered the fact that the Jews are the ones who started World War One, instigated every single country. We have Jewish bankers in every single one of those countries making loans to their military establishment so they could go to war. Okay. While the Jews, global Jew profits. And while all this... They actually had planned the League of Nations. It was actually the original name of the League of Nations was the League to Enforce Peace. Okay.
All right. What a joke.
Yeah, right. But they changed it to the League of Nations because they realized that League to Enforce Peace doesn't sound too good. Right. Right.
And now they changed it to the United Nations.
Right.
Which is totally, totally a lie. When you look at United Nations and then you look at World War II Germany, the movie I told you to look at, you'll see what United Nation really means.
Oh,
and you'll know
Nations.
That there is nothing to do with United Nations in the United Nations. Right. There's been over 75 wars since the United Nations came into existence.
Yes.
There has been no peace. Promise of peace is a lie.
Amen. It's Jewish
lies.
You were told
everywhere that these devils would promise you peace, but never deliver it. And that's exactly what has happened.
Yes. So the Jews manipulated all these nations into this war, which cost hundreds of thousands, millions, literally millions of lives. I think at least 20 million. And plus additional casualties, while the Jews profit in every single one of the nations that's going to war. Okay, so Benjamin Freeman summarized it this way regarding the Balfour Declaration. The Balfour Declaration was merely Great Britain's promise to pay the Zionists what they had agreed upon as a consideration for getting the United States into the war. Now, how did the United States get into the war? Well, you touched upon it. They had to create the Federal Reserve Bank first, in order to finance the war. So that was created a year before the war. And then Woodrow Wilson promised the American people that he would keep our boys out of the war because we had no legitimate reason for getting involved in Europe's wars. Okay? But the first thing he did upon getting reelected was he started campaigning for war. All right? And they used the Lusitania.
Remember that Woodrow Wilson did the same exact campaign as he did. The same, I'm going to keep
you
your boys out of the war.
Roosevelt.
See, they were
Roosevelt.
Already talking about war before 1914.
Yes, exactly. Well, because Woodrow Wilson was a Jew puppet. It was Colonel Edward Mandel House, who was like the Kissinger to Richard Nixon and the Bernard Baruch to federal dictator Roosevelt. He was a Rothschild agent in the White House, manipulating Woodrow Wilson. Okay.
Absolutely.
So, right.
But both of those men had the same, they both have the same slogans in their campaigns.
Right.
Both,
exactly.
Both FDR
we kept
and
your
Woodrow
boys
Wilson.
Out of the war.
Both.
Yeah. While they were secretly
they
planning
too.
War. Right. They were both liars and Jew puppets. Both of their administrations were riddled with Jews. And in Woodrow Wilson's case, most of these Jews weren't even American citizens. And for the most part, that was true of Roosevelt's Jews as well. They're not American citizens. They were aliens who had taken over our country by controlling our various presidents. Okay? So that's how they operated. So the Balfour Declaration was the promise that the international Jew made to Britain that they would bring America's military into the war, that we're talking about World War I now, in order to salvage Palestine for the Jews. That's what it was. Because had Britain lost that war, which was on the verge of losing, then they couldn't grab Palestine. They had to have Britain win the war in order to grab Palestine. Otherwise, the whole scheme would have fallen apart.
And so when Germany was 2 weeks from winning the war and willing to just say, we're going to just go home. We don't want any reparations. We don't want to win. We don't want to kill anybody else. We don't want to do anything else.
Right.
We're just going to go home.
Well,
of course, they're not going to let them do that. Jewry would not let them do that.
Well, as Benjamin Friedman states, the Germans offered peace to Britain on status quo ante basis, meaning let's just forget there ever was a war and we'll just go back as if the war had never happened and we'll have our territory, you'll have your territory, and we'll just start over again, okay? Now, that's pretty good peace terms for an evil nation of, cutthroat Germans, right?
and warriors that wanted to just kill as many as they could because they're an evil, awful warrior-type people.
And we're throwing French babies up into the air and catching them on their bayonets. Another wartime lie, wartime propaganda.
Yes,
okay?
that was done, as we know, in the Bolshevik Revolution.
That's right.
Talked to you about, see, I learned the thing from Ursula Haverbeck. I'm going to read that on my show.
Okay.
She was the one that was saying that the Jewish press had said that the Germans cut off the hands of the Belgian children.
Right.
So that they couldn't grow up to be soldiers.
Yeah.
and I told you that's what happened in Armenia.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So the Jews always accuse other people of what they themselves are most guilty of. And since they control the press, they are able to get away with these lies. And people who are involved in the actual fighting, who know better, they die off and they can't tell their stories anymore, right? While Jewish propaganda goes on and on and on. So here from the Money Masters, how the international bankers gained control of America. It says, in America, J.P. Morgan was the sales agent for war materials to both the British and the French. In fact, 6 months into the war, Morgan became the largest consumer on earth, spending $10 million a day all on war materials for the British and the French. On other Rothschild allies in the United States made out as well from the war, President Wilson appointed Bernard Baruch to head the War Industries Board. According to historian James Perloff, both Baruch and the Rockefellers profited by some $200 million during the war. Okay, so you see all these Jewish companies, and if they're not exactly Jewish companies, they're subsidiaries of Jewish-owned companies, Rothschilds being the primary owners and the Rockefellers. These people were profiting immensely off the war. Okay? David, how many history books talk about this? Who was profiting off the war?
Zero. Nobody ever tells you to follow the money. No Jew would ever tell you to follow the money because the money would come to him.
Yes.
It's just like Eustace Mullen says that whenever he studied any of the conspiracies, whether it was money, banking, medical, anything, the same names came up.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, these names that we read, the ones I read in The Mystery of the Serpent, the ones that Bill Cooper would read, like Judah P. Benjamin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, these are all the same names that are involved in these Rockefeller, Rothschild, Jacob Schiff, some of the ones you just mentioned as well. These names all have come up over and over. Frankfurter.
Whoever it is,
Felix Frankfurter. I mean, the same names keep coming up for all these things.
And while these
They don't ever want to lead you to who might have done it.
Exactly.
They just want to demonize the loser of the war.
That's right. That's all war has been orchestrated by Jews in the modern era. Don't let anybody tell you these wars are caused by nationalism. These wars are caused by Jewish banksters for the point of destroying the white race and profiting thereby. Okay? In the next section. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say this. Think of this. All right? I'm going to mention this because of division. Again, division, the Jew. I'm proving to you that they are dividing to conquer. Okay? We see what Rothschild wanted to do in the Civil War was he wanted to divide the nation into two, the North and the South, and he was going to have two of his sons take charge of each area.
Right.
Now, that weakens the nation again, right? North against South. What happened during all that? Freemasonry is involved.
Yes.
And what happens?
Yes.
The prime of all of America, the prime men of all of America got slaughtered. And while what happened after? The nation had, the generations, of course, were now weakened. All those great men who would have had great children, who would have grown up to be great men,
are gone. Yeah.
White men, yes, exactly.
Right.
And there's your division, though. You see, he wanted to divide it up. Freemasonry is on both sides, by the way.
Yes.
Just in case you don't realize that.
And so are the Jews.
And, there it is again.
Jews are on both sides.
Anytime you see the slaughtering of human beings or white men, like in France or any of these things we're talking about, or the Civil War.
Right.
Freemasonry is right along on both sides.
During the Civil War, August Belmont was the Jewish banker in charge of the North, leading up to and including the Civil War. And Judah P. Benjamin was the Rothschild agent ruling the South, ruling the economics of the South. And the guy coordinating the affairs of both was John Slidell, who married into the Rothschild family. All right, so he was making sure that the war would drag on for years to cause maximum devastation to the white race. Okay, this whole thing was Civil War was totally orchestrated by the Jews, by the Rothschilds, as you just pointed out. Okay, so this is nothing new. And we'll be doing probably a series on that in the near future as well, folks. You need to know how the Jews have destroyed the white race at every possible opportunity. Again, dividing and conquer, their purpose there was because they feared America would be such an economic powerhouse that they would overshadow the Rothschild operations in Europe, okay, and around the world. And we would have. America would have. But that's why they had to have a civil war to dethrone America's economy, all right, and turn it into two sub-states that were fighting against one another. And it was pure divide and conquer tactics. So, and we can go into that in a series, whenever we decide to do that.
I did want to say one thing. You see, the gray uniform, like the Germans had the gray uniform, was against the North, the blue uniform.
Right.
Now, one other thing about that was the Germans or the South, right? I'm saying that the South should have won the war. If the South had won the war, we wouldn't be in the position we're in right now, or at least not this far along. But what I'm saying is General Sherman, just like the Allies, he fought a war where he just devastated everything, destroyed all the food, destroyed all the cattle, destroyed anything that the people had. I mean, there was no cause for this. This went against this. These are war crimes that go against the what do you call it? Military etiquette, let's say.
Sure, right,
listen, this you know, when you have an enemy done, you don't have to just kill them completely and do everything, rape and pillage and do everything. There's certain rules in warfare that are, decency, too. There's respect of your other soldier. Well, Mr. Sherman or General Sherman, he had no respect. And this has never taken place before in such a horrible way. And in the same way that we see the Germans also in World War II and World War I stuck by what was the thing called?
Rules of war.
Where you have.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
They obeyed it. They obeyed the etiquette of the war.
Yeah, how to treat World War II.
Criminals. Right. I mean, how to treat your enemy, when you're
prisoners
taking them into custody.
Right. Yeah, well, the German camps were actually very sanitary.
Say it again?
the German camps were actually very sanitary, and they treated American and British prisoners of war very well, which is not true.
Yeah,
the
but
other
how,
way around.
How did the British and the Americans and the Russians treat the Germans after the war when they had them?
Horribly. Starved them to death.
It's horror. It's complete
horror.
I mean, what I'm saying is the German were a moral people. They were a very moral army. They did stick to how you treat war prisoners.
Right.
Whereas the Allies, who were supposed to be the good guys, all went, over the threshold, just like General Sherman did.
Yeah. So, but let's get back to World War One. By 1920, Morgan partner Thomas W. Lamont noted with obvious satisfaction that as a result of 4 years of war and global devastation, quote, the national debts of the world have increased by $210 billion, or about 475% in the last 6 years. And as a natural consequence, the variety of government bonds and the number of investors in them have been greatly multiplied. These results have made themselves manifest in all the investment markets of the world, but nowhere perhaps greater in measure than in the United States. It may be noted that in 1913, the U.S. government budget was a mere $714 million, while the Rockefeller Empire was worth $950 million. The Rockefeller and Morgan empires were built through financing by the Rothschild banking family, unquote.
Have you ever questioned this, ladies and gentlemen, that we used to have gold in America, and we put the Federal Reserve Bank in control of our gold, and I've heard recently America has no gold.
Yes, yes.
What could have happened to that gold?
Yeah, the Jews stole it. That's very simple, right?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, in 9/11, there was gold in the bottom of those buildings supposedly being stored.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right.
See, they don't talk about that either. That's
never talked
about. Yeah,
there were pools of gold. There were pools of molten gold that probably somebody forgot about, right? There was molten gold down there, which obviously jet fuel can't do that. Can't melt gold, right?
Well, remember, they got everything out of there very quickly. There was no investigation. All that was torn down very quickly and sent to China.
Yes, right. Right, for scrap. Right, that was
no investigation.
Expensive.
They didn't want you to look at any of the metal and see what it was about. They just get it out of here.
Yeah, they didn't want you to find any thermite or any other or nukes. Right, tactical nukes. They didn't want you to find any of that. England, by the summer of 1916, was considering Germany's peace terms. They had no choice. It was either accepting this negotiated peace, that is, the status quo ante terms that we mentioned, that Germany was offering to them, or going on with the war and being totally defeated. While that was going on, the Zionists in Germany, led by the Jew Chaim Weizmann, who later became the first president of Israel, went to the British war cabinet and said, quote, don't capitulate to Germany. You can win this war if the United States comes in as your ally. We can arrange this. But in return, you must promise us Palestine once the tide turns in your favor, unquote.
You see? You see how what I was just saying is just proved right there? While the Germans were fighting the war, that's why they came back and said, how did we lose the war?
Yeah, they didn't
because
lose the war.
The Jews were subversive in their government, working against the nation.
Right. The Jews within Germany were subverting Germany.
That's what I'm saying.
That's right.
They were destroying the currency. They were sabotaging the so that they didn't have enough metal to make guns and so on and so forth, and didn't have enough food. Remember, Germany had to import a lot of their food. They don't have enough farmland to feed that whole nation, never mind armies and horses as well. The Germans used horses in World War One. All right. In other words, you want to think about the fact that the Jews are sabotaging their supply lines from within the country, never mind from without the country.
Right. Right. This gets worse, folks. Historian Alan Brugar has pointed out that for every soldier who died in battle, the international bankers made a profit of $10,000. That's pretty good. $10,000 per soldier who died in battle. It was the bankers who manipulated the horrific World War One. This bloodletting was not just to make profits. This was also carried out to exhaust countries by bleeding them and enhance the control of bankers over governments with the objective of setting up a Jew world order. The penetration of the banking families into the power fabric of nations can be gauged from the astonishing fact that during World War I, German intelligence was headed by the banker Max Warburg, of course a Jew.
Mm-hmm. Brother, there's another of those names.
Yes, right. Brother of a naturalized U.S. citizen, Paul Warburg. Paul Warburg authored the diabolical Federal Reserve scheme. The Warburgs were among the owners of the Federal Reserve. Both represented their respective quote-unquote countries in the delegations that met at the peace negotiations at Versailles after World War I, in which Germany was ripped off completely, more than ripped off. It's called the stab in the back.
Oh, geez, I wonder who might have done that.
Yeah, right? So this... there's no bottom to the depth of Jewish perfidy and Jewish destruction of nations, primarily those of the white race. Okay? As Henry Ford saw it, Mr. Wilson, while president, was very close to the Jews. His administration, as everyone knows, was predominantly Jewish. Wilson seemed to have been the first president to have the full backing of the Jewish lobby, including multiple major financial donors, and he was the first to fully reward their support.
Yes, because Taft would not have done so.
No, he would not have done
that's
so.
That's why I mention this often, but you see, Taft would not have brought in the... See, when they did the coup, when everyone went home for the holiday at the end of the year, that's when the Jews threw this through. And then they had Woodrow Wilson they had him blackmailed because of his little affair he was having. So they knew he had to sign it. But had Taft been in there, Taft, even though they would have put it through, he would have reneged on it. He would have got rid of it.
Yes.
So basically they brought Teddy Roosevelt in on the third party. This is how democracy works, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
You see, we can't let a fair election happen and let the people have who they really want to be president. It has to be whoever the Jews want. So if the presidential election doesn't end up, of course, it didn't work this time, or maybe it did. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what I'm saying is they brought Teddy in on the third party. That's what the purpose of the third party is. And yes. Teddy drew enough votes from Taft so that they could get Woodrow Wilson in.
Right.
Now, and that's how the dirty work of democracy is done.
Yes. Dirty democracy. Democracy is always dirty. It's always a Jew.
It's the vilest form of government, according to James Madison. I'm going to, until the people, I don't want to hear anybody talking about democracy like it's a great form of government, that it's our beloved democracy. It may be your beloved democracy, but it's a nightmare for me.
Yes. Yes. So Mr. House is the actual ruler of America during Woodrow Wilson's presidency. He's the one
House, right? Colonel Mandel House?
Exactly. A Jewish Rothschild agent. Okay.
Okay. You want to know what he did as well?
Go ahead.
I'll let you go. I'm sorry. But you know that he made sure that Churchill, they knew that the 1929 crash was going to be. Colonel Mandel House personally took care of Winston Churchill and made sure he lost nothing in that.
Right.
In that transference of wealth, by the way. And you know Churchill's a Jew, so of course that's why they took care of him.
Yes, yes. I'm going to be quoting now from The Controversy of Zion by Douglas Reed, who on page 284 says this of House. By 1916, Mr. House had instructed Mr. Wilson as to his duty, and in May the president publicly announced support for the plan at a meeting of a new body candidly called the League to Enforce Peace. That's the original name of the League of Nations. Mr. Wilson knew nothing of its nature. It does not appear that Woodrow Wilson studied seriously the program of the League to Enforce Peace, Mr. House's private papers. This was a reincarnation of the earlier League to Enforce Peace, which Lord Robert Cecil had reminded Mr. House really became a League to Uphold Tyranny. In 1916, the name gave away the game. American opinion was not then ready to walk into so obvious a trap. Senator George Wharton Pepper recalls, quote, a heavily financed organization aptly entitled the League to Enforce Peace, and as he said, heavily financed, doesn't say who the financiers are, was making our task easier by emphasizing, as its title indicated, that the covenant of the League of Nations was intended to be made effective by force. Our constant contention in opposition to theirs was that the appeal to force was at best futile and at the worst dangerous. So this, the Jews have learned how to properly name their entities since this failure. Right.
All right. May I interject something about this, about this peaceful thing? Now, here it is. I want you to picture the Jews now. They've become the Young Turks. They've got into the leadership of the Armenian people or the Turkish nation. And they tell the people, now this is back then. This sounds like it could be today. I've said this before. We believe you have terrorists among you. All we want you to do is give up your guns.
Right.
And we can all live in peace.
But how are we supposed to protect ourselves from the terrorists if we give up our guns, right?
That doesn't make any sense. About that. As long as you give up your guns, we can all live in peace. They were promising them peace. What happened when they give up the guns? Pay attention, America.
Yeah.
That's when the 1.5 million Armenians were killed, and that's where the hands were ripped off, you know, cut off and strewn about the highway. But let me explain to you about the United Nations promise of peace. How do we get this peace? Every nation gives up their sovereignty to this building full of Jews or people.
Yes.
And, you know, like your sovereignty's gone, which means now you're an international property. You're not even your own nation anymore. You have no sovereignty. Where the American citizen used to be a sovereign citizen, owning his land, owning his home. Whereas the American does not own his home anymore, because if you do not pay the taxes so you can send Negroes to school,
right,
they'll put your house up for auction.
Enforcing the peace, enforcing multiculturalism by taxing white people to bribe black people to become American and to vote for the Democratic Party, right? That's how it works.
So the question is, peace for whom?
Yes, for the Jew.
That's exactly right.
Perpetual war for perpetual profit. That's the Jewish game plan, okay? So let's continue here. Mr. House, having decided, and Mr. Wilson having declared, that a new international order, recalling George Bush, a new world order, just a slight difference in terminology, must be established. Mr. House, according to Mr. Howden, set up a body known as the Inquiry to draft a plan. Its head was his brother-in-law, Dr. Sidney Mezes, then president of the City College of New York, obviously a Jew, and its secretary, a Mr. Walter Lippmann, communist spy, then writing for
another Jew.
Yeah, another Jew.
I wonder how many on this council will be Jews.
Right. A doctor.
Will
Isaiah,
it be like the Supreme Court?
Right. Dr. Isaiah Bowman, then director of the American Geographical Society, gave personal advice and assistance. The group of men placed in charge of the inquiry, therefore, was predominantly Jewish, though in this case, not Russian Jewish. It was so.
Oh, that makes a big difference.
American
whether it was
Jews,
Russian,
right? Yeah, it's meaningless. This might indicate the true nature of the superior authority indicated by Dr. Kostein's allusion to the Jewish International, and Jewish inspiration may thus reasonably be seen in the plan which it produced. No, that's illogical. Right?
Unbelievable.
It's Jewish from the get-go. Okay, now I want to go to real new real Jew news, which is, of course, Brother Nathaniel Kaplan's website. Excuse me, I'm having a cramp in my side. So
that's because you're going to that site. That's why.
Yeah, right. But it says, this is a Jew admitting that other Jews are the culprits here. Jews were key advisors of the Versailles Treaty of 1919, which carved Germany into pieces just after World War I. Rabbi Stephen Wise advised President Wilson about the impending treaty before Wilson left America for the Versailles Peace Conference. The Jew Bernard Baruch advised Wilson at the conference. British Prime Minister Lloyd George was advised by the Jew Phil Sassoon. French leader George Clemenceau was advised by his Jewish Interior Minister George Mandel, a.k.a. Louis Rothschild. Representing the American banking interests was Paul Warburg, the chairman of the Federal Reserve. His brother, Max Warburg, the head of the German banking firm of Warburg & Company, also the head of the German Secret Service, which he doesn't mention, was there as a representative of Germany. By the Treaty of Versailles, the German people were thoroughly humiliated. The old Austrian Empire was balkanized and divided up into allotments satisfying the political intrigues of the architects of the treaty, namely the Jews.
Stop right there. It was what, Eli? It was divided?
Balkanized, yes.
Yeah, it was divided up.
Yes.
By the Jew.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I wonder if that weakened the nation. Yes, it did. Of course it did.
That's
and
not
Hitler
possible.
Speaks about that, how he felt about Austria too, because in Mein Kampf.
Yes.
He does speak about that. It disgusted him.
Right, right. Now, remember, we talked about Dr. Weizmann being the primary linchpin of getting Palestine for the Jews. Okay. Now, Douglas Reed in Controversy of Zion on page 287 says this. When the war at last ended on November 11, 1918, none other than Dr. Weizmann was at luncheon as sole guest of Mr. Lloyd George of Britain, whom he found reading the Psalms and near to tears. I guess maybe he read the Psalms and realized that the Jews had destroyed the world. Okay. Afterwards, the Zionist chieftain watched from historic 10 Downing Street as the prime minister disappeared, borne shoulder high by a mafficking mob towards a Thanksgiving Day service at Westminster Abbey. Cutting to the chase. Then Dr. Weizmann led a Zionist delegation to the peace conference of 1919, where the New World Order was to be set up. He informed the August Council of Ten that the Jews had been hit harder by the war than any other group, which is a bold-faced lie.
But they had been putting that in papers, how 6 million Jews, I mean, right. This is back even before World War One. How this is 6 million Jews are being starved and tortured in Russia.
Yes.
6 million Jews. I mean, this is
lie.
Unbelievable, but go
right.
ahead.
Yeah. Well, he mentions that the politicians of 1919 made no demur to this insult to their millions of dead. Right. Only white people had been slaughtered. Hardly a Jew died during World War One, okay? But they were making up this lie about the 6 million already in World War One. However, a remonstrant Jew, Mr. Sylvain Levy of France, at the last moment tried to instill prudence in them. He told them, quote, first, that Palestine was a small, poor land with an existing population of 600,000 Arabs, and that the Jews, having a higher standard of life than the Arabs, would tend to dispossess them. Second, that the Jews who would go to Palestine would be mainly Russian Jews who were of explosive tendencies. Yeah, the Bolsheviks. Third, that the creation of a Jewish national homeland in Palestine would introduce the dangerous principle of Jewish dual loyalties. Wow, that's prophetic. So there were some intelligent Jews in those days who were trying to fight Zionism. Okay.
Well, can I say something here?
Yeah.
Look at this. I have an article here from the newspaper, and just whose name just came up, who Stephen Wise, Dr. S.S. Wise, okay?
Right.
He's going to do a new statement on question after the war. It says, New World Order pledged to Jews.
Right.
Hello.
Yeah, they admit it.
This is 1942, right? Right. So it says... Arthur Greenwood of British War Cabinet sends message of assurance here, writing the wrongs seen. Now, this Stephen was just talked about a minute ago there. He's the one that says communism is Judaism.
Yes.
Okay, in the first public declaration on the Jewish question since the outbreak of the war, Arthur Greenwood, member without portfolio, to the British War Cabinet, assured the Jews of the United States that when victory was achieved, an effort would be made to found a new world order based on the ideals of justice and peace. this is an old article, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. Yes.
This is after World War One, and it's during World War Two. But I mean, you can go look at it yourself. Google it up. Just say a new world order to the
Jewish.
To the Jews news article. You'll
it's
see
totally
everything
Jewish.
You need to see.
Totally Jewish from the get go, right? So now, Mr. House, because we already quoted here from Real Jew News how this came down at the Versailles Treaty on page 289 of Controversy in Zion. Mr. Reed says, Mr. House was at his zenith, Prime ministers, ministers, ambassadors, and delegates besieged him at the Hotel Crillon. In a single day, he gave 49 audiences to such high nobles. Once the French prime minister, Mr. M. Clemenceau, called when Mr. Wilson was with Mr. House. The president was required to withdraw while the two great men privately conferred. Mr. Wilson, we don't need you. Please step out of the room. Perhaps humiliation at last broke Mr. Woodrow Wilson. He was stricken by mortal illness in Paris, as Mr. Franklin Roosevelt at Yalta, though Mr. Wilson survived rather longer. Apparently the two never saw or communicated with each other ever again. Mr. House merely recorded, "My separation from Woodrow Wilson was and is to me a tragic mystery, a mystery that now can never be dispelled, for its explanation lies buried with him." No, it doesn't. Wilson realized he was nothing but a Jew puppet, and he had no power whatsoever, and it broke him. Remember Wilson's 14 points that he went over there?
The little statement he made he sounded like he regretted helping, right.
No, the 14 points were his attempt to, this is the terms of the peace. And one of the points was that every nation has a right to self-determination. But the Jews didn't like that. Didn't like that point.
And against what I just told you.
Exactly.
If you've got to give up your sovereignty, means you gave up your right to your nation's whatever you want to do with your nation.
Yeah.
You gave it up to somebody. Why would you do that?
Exactly.
Why would you even consider giving your sovereignty up?
Well, see, Wilson thought he was president of the United States and that his opinion mattered. Right? This is what he thought going to the Versailles Treaty. He found out that his opinion meant nothing. And it was Colonel House who was the real president of the United States, of course, being the agent of the Rothschilds. What the Jews want, the Jews get. And Mr. Wilson was nothing but a throwaway puppet.
So he was his handler, you could just say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. End of story. Now, I just want to go, let's see, we have about 40 minutes left. I want to quote, this is from a book, The Judaism and the Vatican, by Leon de Ponsins. And he talks about the fact that, while all of this was going on, the Russian Revolution was going on during World War I, okay, because the Jews used World War I as a smokescreen to destroy Russia, okay? The Tsar never saw this coming. Yeah, although there were all kinds of Jewish assassins that had attacked Russian government, okay, government officials. I don't think the Tsar of Russia could imagine how evil these Jews really were. I don't think he could just imagine. He couldn't imagine it, okay?
Blood that was spilt, Eli, that was spilt in that time, there was 2 inches or so of blood on the floor, like covering the floor with brains splattered all over the place.
Right.
Human body parts and everything. I mean, this is one of the cruelest things you could ever even imagine.
As a Jewish slaughterhouse, the Bolshevik Revolution was a Jewish slaughterhouse, and the victims were white Russians, primarily Christians. At least 100 million slaughtered by these Jewish Bolshevik cutthroats who called themselves the God's gift to the world. Right? Okay. So in this book, this is Judaism and the Vatican, on pages 108 and 109, he just reels off a list of Jewish cutthroats, Jewish genocidal maniacs. The highest placed amongst the Polish communist Jews serving the terror was Jacob Berman. And in Hungary, we have, we had Béla Kun, for one. I don't think he mentions him. Béla Kun was the Jewish communist that took over Hungary in World War II. But
You mean he wasn't black? Béla Kun?
Right. K-U-H-N.
I thought he might have been a black vampire. Béla Kun?
Right, exactly.
Béla Lugosi?
Right. So we have the Hungarian regime composed of Jews, Rákosi, Gero, Ravai, Vas, Antal Apró, George Lukács, and others. Continuing, same country, Gábor Péter, the Hungarian Beria, leader of the Hungarian secret police under Jewish dictatorship, Mihály Farkas, minister of defense, and his son Vladimir, Of course, then he does mention Bela Kun later on here. Between 1905 and 1917, there was a continuous series of violent political crimes to which some of the highest dignitaries of the Tsarist regime fell victim, including the Tsar's uncle, the Grand Duke Sergius, the Prime Minister Pleve, Stolypin, and others. The two most prominent leaders of the terrorist organizations responsible for these murders were the Jewish revolutionaries Gershuni and Azef, in collaboration with Silberberg, Max Schweitzer, and Rautenberg. In 1907, a bomb was thrown at the state bank in Tiflis, killing a number of Cossack guards, and a considerable quantity of money was stolen for the purpose of financing the Bolshevik agents. More Jews, Meyer Ganach Mosevich Wallach, alias Finkelstein, was arrested in Paris.
Rabbi Finkelstein.
Right, there you go. Charged with being concerned with the theft of 250,000 rubles at the Tiflis bank. He wandered around. He finally wound up in England, where he was active in stopping the recruiting among Jews of the East End of London. Why would he do that? See, because he knew. See, the Russians, the Jews of Britain, America, France, and even Germany were very much anti-Russian because they all hated the Tsar, because the Tsar was anti-communist, right? So most Jewish opinion was not against Germany at this time. It was against Russia. Okay, so Finkelstein knew, hey, we've got to turn the tide from Russia to Germany, because now our real enemy is Germany. Because why? Because they wouldn't give us Palestine.
Yes, and now think about something, what you just read, right? Mm-hmm. And what we just talked about with Freemasonry and all the revolutions and everything. And when we talk about Judaism, we're talking that these Jews, under the guise of a religion, are international criminals. It's a criminal organization. It's a mafia. It is in the guise of a religion for the obvious reasons. Wouldn't you like to be able to hide under a religion if you were going to be a criminal organization, right, and get all kinds of blessings from the public while you were duping them?
Who would suspect that the priest was a child molester?
You just heard what these people are all involved in. These are Jews.
Yes.
I thought they were God's chosen people. No. I thought Judaism was a holy book. The Talmud, right, the series of books called the Talmud. I thought it was holy books, just like the Bible. No, it's a criminal organization, and it is in the guise of a religion. And I'm telling you, you just got to realize this. You're being fooled.
Right. Well, this book is so outstanding because it talks about the little Jews who are working in conjunction with the Jew banksters and how they operated to undermine governments, okay? So remember...
There's your other thing, Eli, right? Mm-hmm. They say it's only the people at the top that do these things.
right? So we're following...
There's my evidence right there.
Oh, absolutely. We're following the career of this guy who changed his name to Finkelstein. His real name is Meyer Ganach Mosevich Wallach. Okay, change his name to Finkelstein.
Eli Wallach, remember that?
Right,
actor,
exactly.
Eli Wallach.
He's a Jew too.
He's a cowboy, wasn't he?
No, he's a Jew.
Yeah.
Put a hat on him and spurs. He's still a Jew. Okay.
Yeah, but you thought he was a cowboy when he was playing with.
Yeah, he was in there, didn't you?
Clint Eastwood, right? Right? Eli Wallach.
There you go. Right. So this Jew winds up in the East End of London now, diverting Jews' attention from Russia to Germany. Okay. With the assistance of two other Jewish revolutionaries from Moscow, Holtzman and Feinberg, he was concerned with the circulation of seditious literature on behalf of Germany. After the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917, he subsequently became Soviet ambassador to the court of St. James in London. Wow, how the little guy can rise to the top. Assuming the name of Maxim Litvinov. Later, he became president of the Council of the League of Nations.
Hello.
Right? Okay. And then he lists a number of Russian officials that were murdered by Jewish revolutionaries. Okay? So the reason why we're going through all this, dear listener, is you have no idea how evil these Jews are. You have no idea. They will stop at
nothing.
Yeah,
they're murdering. They're involved in murder.
Yes.
They're involved in sabotage of nations, as we saw, that they said, hey, don't end the war. We want more blood spilled.
That's right.
We don't want Germany. This is within the government of Germany. Don't let that stop. Don't give up right now and stop the war. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
These people don't realize. They think these Jews are like these holy people or something. And in reality, they're the biggest criminals on the planet.
Yes.
Any criminal organization derives from them.
Yes, yes.
The mafia included.
Yeah.
Freemasonry included.
Yes. Okay, there's one more book I'd like to quote from. I sent you the link for Chapter 10, The Treaty of Versailles. This is from Pawns in the Game by William Guy Carr.
William Guy Carr. Right.
Yeah. This book, everybody, every white person on the planet needs to read this book, Pawns in the Game by William Guy Carr, because he reveals Jewish treachery against the white race in occasion after occasion after occasion. And he says, the circumstances surrounding the signing of the armistice on November 11, 1918 must be understood. The German high command did not ask for the armistice because their armies were in danger of defeat. When the armistice was signed, the German armies had never been defeated on the field of battle. The German high command asked for an armistice so they could devote their efforts towards preventing a communist revolution.
There it is again,
okay.
Trying to protect the whole world from communism, which is what Hitler did
yes.
as well. And what we did is we killed our own brethren and
right.
ensured that we would be under communist,
yes.
Under the communist revolution that's taking place in
yeah.
all of our countries today.
Yeah. The extent to which the Tsar of Germany, the Kaiser of Germany, realized that the revolution was Jewish, I don't know. He probably didn't know. But what he did know was that communism was working its way west from Russia, okay? And then here, guess who? Rosa Luxemburg and her Jewish-dominated Spartacus Bund had planned to duplicate in Germany what Lenin had achieved in Russia exactly 1 year previously. This is what the German high command was worried about. They won the war. They won the war. They
hadn't
lost.
Really lose the war at all.
They didn't lose it at all.
They didn't really lose the war.
No. But, of course, the Jews prolonged the war so that Wilson could get American troops over to defeat Germany ultimately. Okay? The armistice was signed as a prelude to a negotiated peace. It is of the utmost importance to remember this fact because an armistice entered into under those conditions is far different from an unconditional. It was not a surrender. It was simply an armistice.
Then how can you split up somebody's nation over that?
How can
you take reparations from them
Indeed.
Over that? This is all illegal.
Of course it is. But legal doesn't matter to the Jews. Right?
No, I know that. But right? I mean, you know.
Okay, so here's what was going on. Rosa Luxemburg's revolutionaries infiltrated into the German high seas fleet. They became very active in 1918. They spread rumors that the ships and their crews were to be sacrificed in an all-out battle with the combined British and American navies, okay? So the Jews lied to the German seamen to cause them to mutiny.
And what does that do? They were dividing the
go.
People, dividing them
right.
away. They were weakening the German nation
That's
in
right.
the background while the war is going
yeah.
on. See the proof? I don't just say things. The proof,
right.
you've just heard it.
Yes. More white people have been slaughtered by Jewish lies than probably by Jewish guns. Right? Certainly, but
this is crazy. So they're working through the government to weaken the nation. They're
right.
working through the economy and sabotaging the supply lines from their own country,
yes.
within the country. And they've got these subversives going in and trying to spread rumors to cause division
That's
and
right.
to cause people to turn against their own country.
Yes.
This is the Jew. If you want to know your enemy, ladies and gentlemen, you have to realize that you have to see their patterns.
Yes.
We've been trying to show you these patterns. Eli's been showing you some of them for years. You got to start to listen to what we're telling you. And just this show alone, we've shown you the patterns of this enemy. They don't
yes.
change the patterns. These patterns work over and over and over again.
Yes.
This is nothing new for the Jew.
Yes, yes. The communist cells exhorted German seamen to mutiny because they claimed that the planned invasion of Britain was doomed to failure due to the fact that British scientists had developed a secret weapon. Boy, it got them all scared, right? Of course, it's all lies, right? The German seamen mutinied on the 3rd of November 1918. On November 7th, a large body of Marines deserted while on their way to the Western Front. They had been told that they were going to be used to spearhead the rumored invasion of Britain. Meantime, uprisings had caused shutdowns in many German industrial centers. Subversives talked defeatism. Conditions deteriorated until on November 9th, the Kaiser abdicated.
This is what happens when you have the Jews in your nation while you're fighting a war. You realize that General Patton, General MacArthur, and all them, they knew they couldn't win those wars because all their plans that they were planning to defeat the enemy was being sent right to the United Nations and directly sent to the enemy.
Yes. Yes.
You can't have Jews in your country. Yeah. You can't have Jews in your country and think that you're going to be a success at anything.
Right, exactly. They will subvert anything that's good and decent. Okay?
That's why World War II turned out different, because he got them out of the nation. He got the Freemasons out of the nation. I'm sure there was still some subversives somehow in Germany somewhere, but he got rid of the bulk of them.
And that's why they were so successful. He got rid of the homosexuals, too. How terrible.
There you go. Right? There you go. They burned up all that literature, and they made healthy people out of the nation. See, that's the thing, is when I focused on Hitler, a perspective, when you look at the healthiness of this nation, the unity, the true unity, the Jews can't have other people seeing this. They can't allow people to see healthy nations with healthy youth and healthy ideas and a people that are one.
Yes, right.
They can't have that. So they had to demonize Germany, World War II Germany, and they had to make this evil story up because without it, you'd look fondly upon Germany and you'd want to emulate that in your country.
Right, and this is a good place to bring in Albert Pike's prophecy of three world wars. You know, the first one would be World War I, the second one would be a communist war, and the third one would be a war between Christianity and Islam.
Muslims.
Which the Jews have orchestrated all three. And we're in the middle of World War III, folks.
And then they'll tell you, oh, that's a hoax. That's not true.
Right.
That was a hoax.
The fakers are trying to tell us what's true and what isn't, right? Okay, let's continue here because this is very important stuff. Now, we have to realize that the German Navy and Army were mutinying and they were deserting. So the German High Command had really lost control of the Army, okay? The Social Democratic Party immediately formed he calls it a Republican government.
Oh, would you mind doing that? Meantime, uprisings had caused shutdowns in many German industrial centers. See what I mean? They're working in the nation while the nation is at war. Subversives talk defeatism. Conditions deteriorated until November 9th, the Kaiser abdicated. You said that. I just want to see, what I'm saying is that line shows you that they're working inside of Germany while these men are at war, risking their lives. They're doing this stuff within the country. Yeah.
And this is status quo for the Jews. They always get positions of power and they create these rumors to cause mutiny, to cause dissatisfaction. And, of course, they're just lies to divide the nation against itself. And this
division
works.
Is the key to everything. Yes. It's for the Jew and the devil, the division, I have found out, is the very, very, very key.
Yes.
And I'm going to hone on this forever now.
Right. And it's I don't know why the Kaiser abdicated on the 9th. You'd think he would have had some loyal troops to protect him. But he left the country. I think he went to Belgium, if I'm not mistaken. Because he was afraid that Germany was going to be overthrown, just like his cousin, the Tsar of Russia, his country was overthrown, right? And he was afraid he'd get the same fate, okay? The armistice was signed November on 11th, 1918. The communist leaders of the Spartacus Bund had placed their cells in key positions within the new government throughout the armed forces. Their combined efforts created chaotic conditions everywhere. Rosa Luxemburg, the Jewess, then played her trump card. She forced the socialist government to order the immediate demobilization, disarmament, folks, of the German armed forces. This action prevented the German high command from using their well-disciplined troops to prevent the pending revolution, which broke out in January 19. All this was orchestrated and planned by the international Jew, folks. Go ahead.
And one thing to point out, when the leader steps down, if you were fighting the Indians and you shot their leader dead,
right?
They would turn and run.
That's right.
Because the leader is the key. So I just wanted to make this point that the Kaiser abdicated. That means the leader. Now you as the German army and everything have realized that your leader has left your nation.
That's right. And a Jew.
So that is that right there that encourages you to failure, that you've lost.
Amen. Amen. And a Jewess took his place. Right?
How quaint.
How quaint. Before she usurped power in Germany, Rosa Luxemburg was promised the same financial assistance and military aid the international bankers had given to Lenin and Trotsky a year before. The initial stages of her revolutionary effort were financed by the fund they made available through the Soviet ambassador Jaffe, of course, another Jew. The revolutionary effort only failed to accomplish what Lenin had achieved in Russia when the promised aid failed to materialize after Rosa had launched her initial onslaught. She then realized her Jewish Spartacus Bund had been betrayed by the very men she considered her friends and supporters. This incident alone should prove that the secret power behind world revolutionary government is not concerned about the welfare of the Jews any more than it is about the non-Jews. The majority of the directors of the World Revolutionary Movement are men who descended from the Khazars, Tartars, and other Mongol, Asiatic, non-Semitic races. They adopted the Jewish...
Hey, stop right there.
Okay.
Stop right there.
Yeah.
Right there, he's telling you something about the Jews, the Khazarian Jews, and all the Jews.
Yes.
He just said they were non-Semitic.
That's right.
If Khazarian Jews are 95% like these Jews want you to believe is true, mm-hmm. that the which they are just, they are from Edom anyway. They're Hittites
they
and everything
Edomite
else.
Blood mixed
in other words,
them, yes.
They're non-Semitic. So how can we be anti-Semitic? I've been telling you for a long time that the word anti-Semitism means anti-white because the Jews are non-Semitic. What is he telling you right there in that line?
Yes.
He's telling you Khazars, Tartars, and other Mongol, Asiatic, non-Semitic races.
He knows what the Jews are. That's why this book, Pawns in the Game, is an absolute must-read for every white person on the planet. He tells it all. He tells absolutely everything that the Jews have done to the white race since 1815. Okay? They, meaning these Khazars, they adopted the Jewish religion to suit their own selfish purposes between the 7th and 8th centuries. They have used Jews exactly as they have used Gentiles as pawns in the game. I would...
Again, stop one sec.
Yes.
One sec. The Jewish religion that they adopted is called Judaism.
That's
and
right.
Judaism is a, I'm going to say it again, is a criminal cartel in the guise of a religion. So when they adopted Judaism, they didn't adopt the Bible. They
That's
didn't
right.
adopt any Israelite literature. They adopted Judaism, which is the traditions of men that Jesus went against. It
yes.
is not a religious book by any means. It is nothing to do with religion. It is a set of books that would make you sick to read. So
yes.
when they ascribed to Judaism, they did not become holy men and Yahweh's people.
Yes, yes. I don't want to buy completely that Rosa Luxemburg was betrayed because this was a very chaotic period. And it's possible that the money just never got to her, okay? Because she hadn't secured Germany totally. There was still a lot of fighting going on. The German people were mobilizing against her, and her Spartacus Bund. Okay, so it's quite possible that she just couldn't get the money, even though they tried. Okay, so William Guy Carr may be wrong about that. But he continues.
Hey, we're not. All of us are wrong from time to time. Nobody's
yes, right.
perfect. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah. So I don't want to assume that as a fact, what he just said here, that she was betrayed. No, I think the Jews would have tried to consolidate as much European territory as possible. They just failed to consolidate Germany. Okay, they did take over with the Weimar Republic, although it wasn't communist. It was virtual communism. as the Jews were doing. They still tried to destroy Germany. They still starved 70,000 Germans to death after the war, after World War One. Okay, so it's not like their plan to destroy Germany wasn't succeeding. It was, okay. But the Germans were fighting back.
Hey, look at the keystone of this. Look at the keystone of this book too. Right here, he says they have used Jews. Well, the Jews have used the white Jews. People as the pawns in the game.
Right. Yes. Exactly. That's what they do.
So the pawns in the game are you and I, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Amen. Okay. All right. So he tries to shrug off German accusations against the Jews, which are totally accurate. The Jews stabbed Germany in the back and then tried to turn it into a communist country. The German people had every right to be angry with Jews. Every stinking right to be angry with Jews. And he says,
well, they had treated them good, as you said.
They had treated
them so well and treated them as equal citizens. And what did they do but stab them in the back every chance they could get?
That's right. That's right. And he concludes this section, thus the way was prepared for the advent of Hitler. Indeed, because Hitler was the leader that unified the German people. But getting back to the armistice. Soon after the armistice was signed, the international bankers instructed Lenin to consolidate the communist gain and to prepare to defend the Soviet states against capitalist aggression, which means a free enterprise, because capitalism is how Jews lend money into circulation. That's capitalism is misused. Free enterprise is the correct. There's no capitalist aggression. What we have is the white Russians were defending themselves against Jews. Okay,
I say something?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you answer the question because it's easy to answer. This is very easy. Who are the capitalists?
The Jewish bankers, right?
Right, and yeah. Who are the communists?
The Jews and the Jewish bankers.
So, in other words, there's your Hegelian dialectic. I keep mentioning this. This is what we have in America today: is communism is on one side of it, right? We have all these black communists
Judaism,
and these
right?
Jew communists, and then we have the Jew capitalists, and these two things are fighting one another, and in the process of the thing, we have a synthesis
in
America.
They seem to be fighting. They
democracy,
seem to be fighting.
Or whatever you want to call it.
They seem to be fighting each other, but democracy is the battleground. Right?
Yes, well, they're fighting each other in the same way as the parties fight one another.
Right.
It's a game. It's professional wrestling.
It's professional football. Right? That's what it is. But, yeah, actually, professional wrestling is better because that's all stage and phony. Right? There's no
real competition. You know that they say bad things about each other when they're in the background.
Oh, yeah,
but when
right.
it's all over and the lights are down,
they count the money.
They're together
right?
Laughing about the whole thing.
Right. And it may even draw blood sometimes, right? They throw each other out of the ring. Sometimes they land on their head and they draw blood. Well, I mean, that's the price you pay to put on a good show. That's professional wrestling. Okay. So here.
What he said here is he said that they would not, they didn't want to Sovietize. If you go back up here, he said they did not want to Sovietize Germany at this point because they wanted to keep this open because they wanted to have another war with Britain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is a very important thing. So they didn't want to destroy Germany at this point.
Okay.
They wanted to wait and do a second thing where, of course, what happened to Germany after the war? They were divided. Here's the most united nation that has ever been in the history of the world, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
And they divided it. The Wall of Berlin.
Right. Well, all this suggests that the Jews, the international Jew, was perfectly happy to allow Adolf Hitler to gain power with the anticipation of pulling the rug from out from underneath him when it got violent, when the war actually started, which is what they did. In fact, the Jewish money flowed into Germany for a while. And American Jews actually invested because Jews will invest in anything, right? They got plenty of money, and so they're willing to take a loss, and if it pays off, all the better, right? So what we see here is phase two of Albert Pike's prophecy of a battle between nationalism and communism being set up.
Which is going on today,
still. It still is going on today, right? But we're in a full-fledged midst of the third war, which is Islam versus Christianity, also staged by the Jews. Okay? So let's continue. Soon after the armistice was signed, the international bankers instructed Lenin to consolidate the communist gain and to prepare to defend the Soviet states against capitalist aggression. Lenin announced this as his policy. Trotsky disagreed bitterly. He advocated immediate revolution in all European countries, which remained to be subjugated. The problem with this is that they failed to consolidate Germany. What chance would they have to consolidate France, Britain, and other countries? You're talking about a huge revolutionary movement that, the logistics of it were absurd, okay? They managed to secure Russia by subverting it and by talking the liberals in Russia. Remember Lenin said liberals are useful idiots? They managed to convince the liberals that the Tsar had to go. So they had race traders within Russia supporting. Who was the intermediary in Russia? Begins with a K. But anyway, the liberal party won. And the Tsar abdicated, and then the communists took over from them. Kerensky.
Well, when you get to steal the Tsar's, the richest man in the world's wealth, and it's already in your banks,
right?
How can you go wrong?
Yeah, right. And they would not have been able to do that in France, Germany, or Russia. They tried, but it didn't work. Okay.
This is why I say Putin should put a lawsuit. That money still has is still out there. That money has gained a lot of interest on it. That is owed. That is the Russians' people's money.
Yes, yes.
Eventually, we're going to get that back from the Jews. Eventually, that when everything settles down, we're getting that money back from the Jews. Right. But Russia's going to get their money back.
Right. Now, here's Lenin enunciating his long-term policy, which they put fully into effect, and they gained the whole Soviet sphere during World War II. Lenin insisted that their first duty was to establish the communist sphere of influence in all countries of the world located between the 35th and 45th parallels of latitude in the Northern Hemisphere. Lenin stated he would only countenance revolutionary action in countries within those limits, the white countries, right? The most important countries were Spain, Italy, Greece, certain sections of Asia Minor, including Palestine, certain sections of China, and the area both sides of the border in Canada and the United States. Lenin warned the Third International that it was the duty of the revolutionary leaders in all those countries to organize their parties so as to be ready to take over their governments when outside forces created favorable conditions to revolt. Rosa Luxemburg's failure was cited as an example of what would happen if revolutionary area was taken action was taken independently. Okay? So Lenin actually is contradicting Guy Carr. He says that her action was taken too independently and they weren't able to support her quickly enough. But this is all a prelude to World War II, the communist takeover of Europe. Okay?
Yes, and we will discuss, we will show you real accounts next week of people in Poland, how the German people were destroyed, how they were being persecuted and killed to aggravate, to poke a stick into Germany, to make him and aggravate the nation of Germany, the lion, until it would have to attack.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, now we can talk about this. We'll get into this next time, and but we've established that the Versailles Treaty was created by the Jews to carve up Europe into to balkanize Europe, which is the perfect word, to balkanize Europe, which would set up the pretext for another war, and Poland was sucked in. Now Poland, remember, Poland didn't exist. It didn't exist until after World War I, okay? There was a putative nation of Poland since 1200 AD, but Polish territory had been snatched by Russia and by Germany and by other countries. Polish territory was always being fought. Lithuania also stole Polish territory. So Poland, and I believe directly as a result of the Polish monarchy's cooperation with the Jews against their own Polish people, is the price that Poland had to pay for this cooperation of the monarchy with the Jews, okay? But the Jews have never had any love for the Polish people. The Jews have been exploiting the Polish people for since 1200 AD, if not earlier.
That's what I'm saying. There was a long-term divide that somebody deliberately caused between those two nations.
Right.
You know, they're brothers, right?
Yeah.
Could I just listen to this? The international bankers dominated the conference, which culminated in the Treaty of Versailles. This proved to be a fact that in January 1919, Mr. Paul Warburg, who drafted the Federal Reserve System in the United States, arrived in Paris to head the American delegation. Mm-hmm. His brother Max arrived to head the German delegation. Comte Saint-Auclair says, "Those who look for the truth elsewhere than in the official documents know that President Wilson, whose election had been financed by the Great Bank of New York," here it is. I was waiting for this name, Kuhn and Loeb Company. Right. I knew it would come up. That's one of the names. "Rendered almost complete obedience to its beck and call." Dr. Dillon states, "The sequence of expedients framed and enforced in this direction were inspired by the Jews, i.e. representatives of the international bankers, assembled in Paris for the purpose of realizing their carefully thought-out programs, which they succeeded in having substantially executed." Here comes some more names. Mm-hmm. "The Mandate of Palestine was drafted by," here he is, I mentioned him, "Professor Felix Frankfurter," right, "the eminent American Zionist, who afterwards became chief advisor in the White House to President Roosevelt," or Rosenvelt.
Right.
"He was Rosen assisted Jew. By Right Honorable Sir Samuel Dr. Jacobson, Dr. Fuel, Mr. Sacker, Mr. like Sack, Goldman Sachs,
right,
Mr.
Goldman
Sacker,
Sachs,
right. Mr. Landman, Mr. Ben Cohen, Mr. Lucian Wolf, who exercised tremendous influence over Mr. David Lloyd George. He was said to have possessed all the secrets of the British Foreign Office."
Right.
See, they work in these nations. When you think of the CIA and you think of James Bond and all that stuff, 007 is Tubal Cain. Mm-hmm. It's two balls and a cane. And this is a word from Freemasonry. Tubal Cain is also of the seed line of Cain. That's what 007 stands for. These Jews are involved in all these things. They're all over these organizations, because also they'll tell you that the CIA controls Fox News.
Right.
Well, it just means the Jews create the news. The Jews create these.
Right. Exactly.
They're in control of all these things.
Yes. Yes.
So they're subverting your nations through the intel organizations, through the governmental organizations, through the Federal Reserve Act, and then they have the Sayanim, Jews who listen around in every country, every company, every place they can. You know who the Sayanim are, right?
Jewish spies. Civilian spies.
Yeah, they're just regular citizens. Mm-hmm. Like, you might be standing on a corner. They're there. They report these things.
Right, right. So we see, I just put a link in here, Japanese War financed by Jacob Schiff. We have a few minutes left. And the fact is that Jacob Schiff was ordered by B'nai B'rith here in America, the New York branch of B'nai B'rith, which is just a local branch of Rothschild Incorporated, to get Russia involved with a war with Japan. He actually gave the Japanese $20 million, which was a lot of money in those days, to make war against Russia. This was all to prepare Russia for its eventual collapse during World War I. Okay? The Russo-Japanese...
Didn't he also send $20 million onto a ship to fund the... To Lenin?
Trotsky.
To fund
Trotsky.
The... Yes. Well, and look at the name here again in this article, Kuhn, mm-hmm, Loeb and Company again. Just these names just keep coming out.
Right, right.
Without See what Eustace is talking about?
Right, exactly, exactly. "Without lifting a gun, Jacob H. Schiff crushed the Tsarist army and plunged its finest battleships down to a watery grave. Schiff, a direct descendant of the Maharam Schiff, was born in Frankfurt in, 1847. Although he studied at Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch's religious school, it can hardly be said he kept to his alma mater standard." Yes, he did. He's a Jew. He kept to his subversive standards. Okay, "He devoted his energies to high finance and became managing director of Kuhn Loeb, one of the two most influential private international banking houses of the Western Hemisphere. See, the Jews are always complaining.
This is the Kahila you're seeing
right.
here. This
exactly.
is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. As the turn of the last century, he wielded his powerful influence against Tsar Nicholas II after the eruption of the Russo-Japanese War in 1904. It was largely thanks to Schiff's efforts that the struggle ended in a crushing defeat over Russia, leading Russia's Minister of Finance to declare in 1911, quote, "Our government will never forgive or forget what the Jew Schiff did to us. He was one of the most dangerous men we had against us abroad," unquote.
This blackmail.
Was a, yeah. Well, he financed it as a Jew.
Schiff had an iron scruple. Yeah, look at that.
Right. When it came to lending money, right? There was no inhuman persecution of Jews in going on in Russia. That's a fable. That's a fable they created as a cover for supporting the Tsar's enemies.
And okay. It just happened to be 6 million Jews that were being
right, of course.
hurt in Russia, right? too, by the yeah. way.
So here, this was a deliberate attempt to soften up Russia's military to make them vulnerable when the revolution came in 1917. Okay? That's what that was all about. Okay? The Tsar was foolishly advised to join in World War I on the side of the British or the French. He was bound to be betrayed by all parties, and he was. But they dangled this warm water port in the Black Sea in front of his nose, and he couldn't resist it. Okay? So not a very smart move by the Tsar. He just, as I said earlier, there is no way he could see that the Jews were so sinister and had hatched all these plots against him. There's no way he could conceive of that. Okay?
And our people today can't even conceive of it.
Yeah, yeah. That's why we're telling the story, folks. You've got to realize how evil, pernicious, perfidious these Jews are. They're always up to these schemes. They never stop these schemes. They're always subverting nations and destroying cultures. They're always doing
that. Yeah, what does it have to do with religion?
Nothing.
You see, this is the premise that Bill Cooper tried to give us, that Rothschild and all these type of people we're talking about no longer practice the Jewish religion of Talmudism, Judaism. They're all Satanists. This is an absolute lie. Judaism is Satan, Satanist.
Yes.
It is everything against Yahweh. It's
Satanism.
Against all mankind. Never mind any. Yeah. It has nothing to do with religion. These Jews don't ever believe for a minute that, these are just these Jews that don't practice that wonderful religion of Judaism. Come on, use your brains.
Yes, right. In 1904, Schiff invited a number of Jewish communal leaders to a meeting in his home. Within 72 hours, war will break out between Japan and Russia. The question has been presented to me of undertaking a loan to Japan. I would like to get your views as to what effect my undertaking of this would have upon the Jewish people of Russia. Okay, well, obviously, it would weaken Russia. Okay? This is all done deliberately to undermine Russia and set Russia up for the fall in 1914.
And what does division do? It weakens.
That's
Hello.
Right. That's right. And unfortunately, the Tsar was a unwitting accomplice because he fell for all these Jewish plots when he never should have got involved in a war with Japan. Never should have got involved in a war with Japan. What he really should have done, actually goes back to the Pale when the Tsars of Russia tried to put a cordon around the Jewish people because the Jewish people were undermining Russian civilization. They were manipulating the peasants and stealing money from them with usury. Those pogroms were not instigated by the Russian Tsar or the Russian government. Those were simply Russian peasants who got sick and tired of being bankrupted by Jews. Okay.
But also, if the Tsar had known that the Jews were his enemy, he would have never put his money in their banks in
That's
the first
right.
place.
He wouldn't have. Okay? So, as you said, Russia was the next sick man after Turkey.
Right. And then America became the next sick man.
Right. Well,
and all of Europe now, we're all sick men. We're all that. What that means is the parasite is on the host, and it's sucking it, and it's weakening it. That's what a parasite does. It weakens the host. Yes. This parasite will kill the whole host, though. This,
it will.
It doesn't know when to stop.
Folks, we hope you realize what we're telling you is the truth about Judaism and the Jewish people. You better wake up and realize what's at stake and what you're dealing with. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. We're out of time. Thanks for listening.
Praise Yahweh.
When you're riding after rattlesnakes, you've got to be tough. You've got to be rough. You've got to shoot straight. Be on the lookout. The James Gang is back in town, and they're meaner than ever. There's Brother Eli. He stomped down many a snake in his day, and he ain't done yet. His younger brother David